Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and oh, we're going to be traveling today. And how are we going to do that? Well, through your imagination, but we're actually going to be talking about a journey that a man made on a bicycle, and it is really interesting reading, and my guest today is Daryl Farmer. His book is Bicycling Beyond the Divide, Two Journeys into the West. Daryl, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Donna, and thanks so much for having me on the show.
Well, I really have been looking forward to this because here we are in the summertime of the year in my own neck of the woods in the Pacific Northwest. I see people bicycling all the time. In fact, I see people out training because they're competing in bike races. And I just think, this really was quite a journey that you took. Tell us how you decided you were going to do this, because when you did this trip that you're writing about, you weren't a spring chicken.
Oh, when I my first trip, yeah, it was 20. I started planning the trip just out of high school. You know, I played basketball in high school, and I thought that was my kind of ticket out of town, but the scholarship I'd hoped for never really panned out. So I was sitting in the library one day, and I was reading a magazine, and I read an article about some people that had ridden their bicycles, you know, across the country, had done a bike tour, and that just sounded like the greatest thing to me. So I started planning it at that very moment.
Well, now, you did a trip when you were in your 20s, but the
right.
trip I'm referring to you is the one you did 20 years later.
Oh. Oh, when I was 40, yeah, I did. I retraced the same route.
Right. And what was so amazing in doing that is that not only were you 70 pounds heavier, but you also took your journals with you so that you could keep, and you had kept a journal on your first trip. And one of the things that you brought out is that when you did your first trip, nobody had cell phones. We didn't have the technology available that is available today. There weren't phone cards, no ATM machines, and it really was a whole different challenge, wasn't it?
Boy, it really was. You know, when you think about how easily the changes happened over the last 20 years and you don't even really think about them, but you're exactly right. There were no ATM machines. If I needed money, I had to have someone on the other side wiring it to me through a bank, and had to make sure to get it during banking hours. And you know, calls home were a little more infrequent without a cell phone. So.
Now, you said when you think back and you were 20 years old, you said you were naive, you were very sheltered, painfully shy. And you said at that time Ronald Reagan was in his second term. The Los Angeles Lakers, led by Magic Johnson and Kareem, were on the way to their third championship in 6 years. There was a music festival going on live. And it was, you say it was a very, very optimistic time when you did this first journey. Now, here you are in your 40s, for heaven's sake. Why in the world would you even consider doing something like this? You were married. Did your wife think you were nuts?
A lot of people thought I was nuts, I think, and I think a lot of people were concerned about my health because, as you said, I was about 70 pounds more. And that was part of the reason for it. I knew what it felt like to be in such great shape after having done that, and I wanted to feel that way again. And the biggest part of it was just the challenge. I wanted to see if I could, you know, if I could still pedal up those hills. So.
Well, you found out, didn't you?
Yeah.
Now, what was the bike that you used? You had a particular bike that you had ridden in your 20s, and then you decided you were going to use it again.
Yeah, it's a Trek 520. It's a touring bicycle. I bought it in 1984, and it's only, I have a second bicycle that's a mountain bicycle, but, you know, the touring bicycle for roads is the only bicycle I've ever needed.
Now, where did you start from?
I started from Colorado Springs.
From Colorado Springs. Was there a reason why you decided, you were going to mimic your exact ride?
I'm sorry?
You were going to mimic the exact ride you had gone on in your 20s, weren't you?
Right, yeah. That was the original idea, and I did it for the most part through most of the Rocky Mountain region and most of the coast. My original trip, I made it all the way back to Colorado Springs. On the second trip, I made it as far as the north rim of the Grand Canyon.
All right. Well, I think it's a phenomenal accomplishment. But I loved your story about the various experiences that you had, and also the fact that you noted the changes that had occurred in the 20 years in so many different areas. Now, we're starting off in Colorado, and you just said, okay, and this was on Saturday, May the 7th. You decided you were going to begin, and you were going to keep in touch with them all through the trip, your family and your wife. But wasn't your wife going to meet you at some point?
She did. As a matter of fact, she met me up, not far from where you are right now, up in the San Juan Islands.
Oh, that's a gorgeous area.
We did a kayak trip up there together.
Okay, let's start on the journey. Here you are, that you're starting off, and you're finding you're getting pretty tired pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So how did you pace yourself? Because here you are, you're a man that really isn't in what you'd call supreme physical shape. What did you do to pace yourself so that you wouldn't give up? What was that kept you going?
Well, you know, there were times when I wanted to. I think the great thing, though, about a bicycle is that you can pace yourself. And I didn't feel a lot of pressure to have to be at any particular destination on any given day, so I could ride 30 miles or I could ride 100 or whatever. And I also knew that Colorado was going to be the most difficult part of the trip for two reasons. One, because of the mountains were steepest, but also because I had just left and I hadn't ridden into shape yet. So I kind of knew that the Wyoming border was a big destination for me, and I kind of felt like if I could make it that far, then it would be all downhill from there.
Well, it wasn't all downhill. It certainly was up and down hills and a few other things as you were going along. What type of equipment did you take with you? Because with a touring bike, you can't carry a lot of weight. What did you take with you?
No, I had a small tent, a one-person tent. It's very lightweight, and a sleeping bag that's very lightweight. I had a cook stove and the dishes that I needed to cook my meals at night, and, you know, two changes of clothes, and that was about it. A few tools and my journals.
And that was it.
Yeah.
That was it. Well, you started off in Colorado. You thought it was going to be warm. You recalled how 20 years earlier it was beautiful, warm weather when you left there, but that's not what happened with you. You ended up getting into bad weather really quickly.
Yeah, I did. I think my third day out, I hit a snowstorm, and I had to hole up for a day, and then going over the pass the next day, it was 17 degrees. So 20 years before, it had been in the 70s. You know, about the same time of year, but that's Colorado. So.
That's right. That's right. Now you go to Wilkerson Pass, you go to Hartzell, and you meet all kinds of people. And with Hartzell, what was the most significant memory that you have about that community? Now, you haven't left Colorado yet, but you've got a lot of stories in here about things that go on 20 years before and what's happening today.
The thing I remember most about Hartzell is the water. How there was no drinking water there, no potable water at all, and that's certainly different than it would have been 20 years before from what I remembered.
Well, and if I'm looking at some of the material you have in your book, and there was a gentleman, you wanted him to fill your water bottles, and he said, I don't recommend that you do it. And he opened up the faucets, and it came out like rust.
Yeah.
And it smelled like sulfur.
Yeah.
He said, this just isn't good. What a change in 20 years, where water before was fine, and perhaps because of the population development, the aquifers have disappeared and things have changed. So you had that experience. So here you are. Eventually you end up riding 59 miles, and you weren't acclimated. And I know with Colorado, you do have to take time to acclimate, because of personal experience I've had. But you said something that because you weren't pushing too hard, you were a little bit wiser than you had been when you were younger, and you said you'd just take it as you possibly could. And you said the air was so thin, but one of the things that you love about bicycling, doing a tour on a bike, is that you didn't plan ahead. You really took it just one hour at a time, didn't you?
Yeah, I really did. You know, 20 years before, I had a specific destination that I knew I wanted to get to, and I really pushed myself. I rode after dark, and I didn't have lights on my bike, and it was kind of cold at night riding through there. And when I finally got to the cabin, I was staying at a friend's cabin. I was sick, and had a pretty rough night, but. 20 years later, I was in a lot worse shape, but at least I was smart enough to stop before the sun set, you know. So.
You made a comment that in the 20 years, one of the biggest changes that you noted was people being afraid. And that was something that you didn't see very much 20 years ago. There was a whole different feel. And in your touring through the different states, you found that there was this undertone that was there, that there was a suspicious, sometimes, attitude on the part of people that you would never have encountered 20 years ago.
Yeah,
how did that make you feel?
You know, I thought a lot about that, and part of that, and I'm not sure if, I think there's a different sense of suspicion. Part of it was, when I was 20, I was a kid, and I looked like a kid, and maybe people went more out of their way to help me. But I think also that there's just a different different level of distrust, a concern about security.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best examples I know about that was in Colorado, in Vail, 20 years before I had pulled up on the bike trail, kind of wound through the golf course there, which was where a lot of, Gerald Ford played there, and a lot of, it was a big resort area. But anybody could just kind of wander their way through there. As a matter of fact, I camped there. Some people told me it would be okay to just pitch my tent right there on the golf course, and I did that. 20 years later, when I rode by that golf course, there was about 30 no trespassing signs, and the bike trail was kind of off to the edge, and there was no, there was no way somebody could have gotten away with camping on that golf course then. So I think there's a whole different sense about the notions of private property and where people can and can't go. And part of it, I think, in Colorado is it's just grown so much.
Mm-hmm.
That land's at such a premium, the idea of private property is a little different, maybe.
Okay, Daryl, I'm going to ask you to speak a little bit louder because your voice is fading away. So make sure you keep your phone up so that when you're speaking, we're going to be able to hear you. I got a chuckle about you and your story about hail. You said there's a very good reason for wearing a helmet. Hi. We're just having a little bit of a challenge here with the phone lines. So, Daryl, be sure that you speak up loudly.
Okay.
The hail.
Is this better? Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes, that's much better.
Okay.
But project your voice if you can. The hail is something that most of us would say, you're kidding. This is summertime. You're going to experience hail, but you can in different parts of the country.
Yeah, boy, and I sure did. I got caught in a storm there, also in Colorado. And it pounded me pretty good for, a good 5 or 10 minutes.
Right, and there was a cowboy that saw you, and he just looked at you after knowing your experience. He said, you got caught in this storm, and he said, it would have been a nice car wash except for the new dents in his pickup.
Yeah.
He said, did you get any brain damage? And he asked you to hold up, he held up his fingers and asked you to tell him how many you had. He said it helps to have a hard head.
Yeah, well, it helped me at that moment. It sure did.
Right. Now, you went into Wyoming. You had all kinds of experience there. I mean, there's just the most interesting people that you meet on this journey. And you said, when you took your first bike trip, it had taught you that life offered more than the mainstream allowed, that fitting in could be a crutch, and you hadn't ridden away from your comfort zone, you'd ridden into it. This was something that was bringing you to life in a whole new way. And for someone, as they get mature, people will say, use common sense, you know, it's not practical doing something like this. For you, this bicycling through the States was just absolutely liberating for you, wasn't it?
It really was, yeah. Yeah, in a way that has affected me in pretty much everything I've done since. I think that if I hadn't taken that 3-month bike trip, my life would have turned out entirely different than it has.
Now, you went through the Grand Teton,
mm-hmm.
and you just experienced something called the Teton Melancholy. What is that?
Well, this I've experienced a few times when I've been there, and just a sense of, I think in both cases it was being in a place that's just so beautiful and being there alone and wanting people to share it with. But I'm not sure what landscape kind of inspires, what kind of emotional effect landscape has on people. Because I experienced the same thing both times that I'd been in the same place.
Now, you went through, you bicycle, you say how to bicycle through a buffalo herd. And that one is you don't.
Yeah.
Tell us what happened when you met up with that buffalo herd.
Well, I was in a hurry. I had to get to this campground before dark, and it was about 8:30, and the sun was going down, and I came up over a rise, and all the traffic was stopped, and when I got up there a little closer, I saw there were about 200 buffalo in the middle of the road, walking down the road, and it was in May, so it was calving season, so the moms had their babies, and you sure don't want to get close to them then. So I was in kind of a bind. I knew I didn't want to ride in the dark, and finally I met a guy, and he gave me a ride. He tied my bicycle to the hood of his car and gave me a ride through the herd, so I made it, but it wouldn't have been, I would have been in a lot of trouble if that guy hadn't helped me.
Now, you met also an honest-to-goodness vagabond who has total license. In fact, he had vagabonding upheld by the Supreme Court, a document that certified him as a vagabond. He was quite a character.
Yeah, he was. I met him in Yellowstone, and we camped together for a couple nights, and he really was. He had ridden his bicycle up from Arizona, and he, you know, I felt like I was traveling light, but not after I met him, because he was carrying almost nothing at all, his tent, and he'd drink coffee out of an old Chef Boyardee can, and he was really kind of roughing it. He had spent, I think, a week through some rainstorms in Utah where he just kind of lived in a baseball dugout and waited out the rain for a few days. So he was quite a character, yeah. His name was Richard, yeah.
Now, Bozeman, Montana. Montana was quite an interesting state for you to go through because people told you that, you know, there's the economy wasn't necessarily that good. People were working 2 or 3 jobs. And you just, you encountered conversation with people, and one was with a man. You said, gee, Bozeman is sort of like an adventurous town, and you said, no, it isn't anymore. It used to be. He said it's a controlled adventure is what he called it. And I thought that was an interesting observation. that there wasn't the openness and the risk-taking, at least in his perception, on the part of the younger generation today. Would you agree with that?
You know, I think I see a lot of that. My sense is that my memory of the 80s was that it was a very adventurous time. Adventure travel was very much in. Physical fitness was very much in. And it was a different time from that sense. People were willing to take more risks and things. And I think that has changed a lot. People are concerned about security, not only in terms of physical security, but thinking more about future. And I hear college kids now talking about retirement and those kinds of concerns. And I never, when I was 20, saving for retirement was the furthest thing from my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in that sense, things have really, the mentality has really changed a lot.
So here you are, you're moving along. I got a chuckle out of some of the places that you stopped in, because one place had a restroom, and the local people would take bets when they had somebody come in that they knew was from the outside of the environment. But the restrooms were labeled a pointer and a setter.
Yeah.
And you picked the right one. She said a lot of people are confused by the signs, but it's pretty obvious when you think about it. So they're out taking bets on you to see which one you're going to walk into. And then there are these signs. The one was a bumper sticker pasted behind one of the bars that said, "There's plenty of room for all of God's creatures," right next to the mashed potatoes. And another one said, "Monogamy is for geese." And you said, "Gee, I didn't know." There's all of this fun stuff, but you have seen many places as you're traveling that you had good memories of, because you had kept a journal on your first trip when you were 20, and a lot of the places had disappeared. There had been areas that had been taken over by housing development. There was a whole different feel. People were having drug problems that were not in place 20 years ago. There was a whole different feel about nature, too. And when you're looking at that, and you come in, you finally get into Washington, where your wife met you, when you are coming into areas that you have such a clear memory of, and you find that it's changed so dramatically, did you feel a sadness about that?
In some cases, I certainly did when I looked at all the development. But I was also pleasantly surprised to find a lot of places intact, a lot of wilderness. And Washington, I'm sure the Seattle area has grown immensely, but it seems like to me the people in Washington had a very much sense of an environmental ethic and wanting to not only preserve places but to experience them. Maybe that's coming from my experiences with the kayak guides that I worked that I went out with in
mm-hmm.
San Juan.
And you came through the Pacific Northwest. You went through Oregon. You even got to San Francisco. Now that must have been a real trip, going by bike into San Francisco. What was that like?
Boy, it was. You know, after being on the road in all those places where there weren't a lot of traffic, and then when you enter a city like that, there's all this activity and all these things happening around you, and everything seems to be moving faster, and it's very exciting. You know, it's a little bit scary on a bicycle because the traffic's moving so much faster and there's so many more people, but it was exciting. On my first trip, I rode over the Golden Gate Bridge, that was just a very exciting moment for me as a young man who'd never really been out of Colorado before I'd taken that trip. So San Francisco remains just one of my favorite cities even now.
Now, your wife met you in San Francisco, and then you ended up going down into California. How many miles did you ride, and how long did it take you to do it? You even went up into Nevada.
Yeah, it was about 4,000 miles on the second trip, and the first trip it was about 5,500, so almost 10,000 miles in total.
10,000 miles in 4 months. Now, if there's anyone that's listening to this show that thinks, wow, that would be a great adventure, What would you say to someone that might want to do a bike tour like you did? Now, you didn't have any buddies with you. You just did it on your own, and you're pedaling. You were pretty trim by the time you finished.
I was. I lost 45 pounds over the time. I would tell somebody, if it's something they're interested in doing, to go for it. I just think it's the best way to travel. It's such a good way to meet people, and it's just the best way I could ever imagine to get to know this country.
And what time of the year would you think would be the best?
Well, in the West, definitely the summer. Here, right now, I'm living down in East Texas, and I think you could ride down here just about any time except for the summer in July and August when it's so hot. So.
Now, we know you should have a helmet when you're biking. Is there something relative to the type of bike? I mean, what you had a number of times when your tires went flat.
Yeah, I had a lot of flat tires. I hit a lot of glass on the sides of the highway. But I'm kind of an old school rider. You can get tires that are a little bit more protective against that kind of thing. I was determined just to maintain my old bike and do it the way I did when I was 20.
Well, it's a wonderful adventure. Now, as far as safety goes, as far as any particular advice for biking, practical information, what would you want my listeners to know about? Because I'm sure there's going to be young people that would like to do this and maybe buddy up with somebody and just take off and go.
Well, you already mentioned the helmet, and that's certainly the most important thing. I also think it's really important to have a mirror on your bicycle so that you can see behind you for safety reasons. And I think also it's important to plan your route around, kind of look at the roads and make sure that you're taking roads where there's a shoulder wide enough to ride on.
Now, how would you find that out?
I think you can go online, and there's a company called Adventure Cycling that actually makes bicycle mats, and they show the width of the road. I know the state of Oregon puts out a really good map for bicyclists for the coast. And it'll show you how much shoulder you have and how much room. So, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of online places where people can look. But you know what? I travel pretty freely and I go where I want to. And there's very few roads in this country that you can't ride a bicycle on.
Well, I just think bicycling beyond the divide makes for fascinating reading. And sometimes you feel like you're huffing and puffing right along with you. When you're talking about your adventures, I mean, to start out in Colorado, go to Wyoming, Montana, through areas of Idaho, Washington, Oregon, California, Nevada, Utah, and Arizona, 10,000 miles on a bike. No wonder you lost 45 pounds.
Yeah.
Your wife probably didn't recognize you when you got home.
No, she was happy to see me.
No, I know she was happy to see you. Well, Daryl, do you have a website that gives information about your adventure and your book?
I do. It's www.darylfarmer.com.
darylfarmer.com, and that is darylfarmer.com. Is there anything you'd like to leave in the way of a thought for my listeners before we close out our conversation today?
No, the one thing I like to tell people is it's really easy if you watch the news and you read too much to be really cynical, but if you go out there and visit this country and meet the people and look at the land, it's just, you know, I'm so in love with this country and so glad to have the opportunity to be here.
Well, and what a wonderful, wonderful story and legacy to pass on. And you have two sets of journals. You've written a book, and you've given information about what it was like 20 years ago, what it's like today. And maybe, you know, you'll be able to do this again when you're in your 60s.
Oh, I'm thinking about it. I'm hoping so.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I just was joking, but you're serious.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great idea. I really do. I think that we live in a time when you can do that and have a great time. Daryl Farmer has been my guest. If you love the outdoors, you'd love to see and read about his journey. Bicycling Beyond the Divide is fascinating reading. It's about the past, it's about the present, and if nothing else, just see the journey and what he went through just by doing it. He didn't have any prejudgment, he just did it. Daryl, thank you again for being my guest. And go to his website, DarylFarmer.com. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyND.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on bbsradio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to call in, I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here are the telephone numbers you can call in to, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. We also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. And we've got all kinds of goodies to share with you today, but give me a buzz if you would like to chat. By the way, I want to let you know about an absolutely fabulous, fabulous event that I'm going to be participating in. Now, for those of you that are in the state of Washington, this is a must-attend event. It's the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. This is my 6th year of being involved with this wonderful group of people. Something is happening, so we are going to take a break for just a moment here, and I'll be right back. 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.